We're just going to jump right in. We're just going for it.
Well, what else did you want to say
I
anything
don't know. I
else?
just feel like I need to like stretch first or something. Like,
Welcome to the Bonding Time Podcast. It is Lou and Cody tonight.
Woo!
Everyone loves it when Cody jumps in.
Yeah, it's probably a stretch, but
no,
I enjoy
everyone.
It.
Everyone loves it.
Everyone?
Yes, you are beloved by all.
Yes.
I have been spending a lot of time thinking about what we want to be like when we're older. And to do that well, I think we have to backtrack a little bit and, you know, and go back and think about where we've been and own a few things in order to move forward. I think there's so much hate on like Karen behavior right now. And when I was younger, I just would be like, older ladies who are so grumpy and controlling. Oh my gosh. But now I feel like I'm well on my way to being, there. I'm pretty
You're
close.
Like, I get it.
It scares me. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I have to pump the brakes. Mm-hmm. We both brought some mess into our marriage, and then we had some hurt in our marriage. And it does not, I always assumed a toxic person was like an evil, villainous, ill-intended person. And I think you and I, as far as our story, we were two good people who are well-meaning people who were toxic together. And we became more and more toxic. And I also think that sometimes there's like a third person within a relationship. It's like I was me dealing with all my stuff and doing the best I could, and you were you dealing with all your stuff. And when we were together,
I wasn't doing the best I could.
Oh, did I not say that?
You said that about yourself but not me.
you were just
I was
doing.
Just there.
Cody,
there
everyone
you.
Knows you are always doing the best you can. That's not even worth saying. Cody is always extra and always the best at everything. So moving on, our dynamic, though, when we're together, like, I think friends can be this way, family members between a parent and a child, siblings. I think certain dynamics can become, like, you kind of learn a dance and you become explosive, or you become really toxic, where you end up doing damage to each other when you're not necessarily, like, evil in and of, you know, you're not setting out to do damage, but you end up doing a lot of damage. And nothing got better in our lives until we started owning it and naming it and quit worrying about what the other person was doing. Actually, that's not true. I set up some boundaries, but for you, I set up some boundaries with you, which was strengthening. And then I also owned a lot of my own stuff and just committed to working on that and seeking the Lord in that. And that is when things started to rebuild and heal. And here we are today, still
and so,
together.
So I would say some context to this conversation. First of all, this month here in, 2 weeks? We'll be married for 12 years.
Also, it's Valentine's Day.
Ooh,
so
Valentine's.
How romantic to be talking about toxicity.
How crazy things can be. But we decided to kind of jot down and think about a few things throughout the course of our relationship that we feel like were either toxic or bad habits that we have changed or have tried to change, and we didn't share them with each other.
No, yeah.
We just decided to like think about it and things that we think we've needed to change and improve on to improve our marriage. So should be interesting.
Right. And we're not just leaving it at that. We're also talking about life-giving things, because the thing I love about Jesus is that he wants us to have abundant life. And so instead of just stopping bad habits and like, oh, that's, you know, shame on me, I have this bad habit, going forward and replacing it with life-giving habits that actually have bred a lot of healing and new life within our relationship and our personal lives. So you start first.
Well, before I get into my first talking point, do you want to maybe define sort of or read what you define as a toxic relationship or toxic
marriage? Yeah, actually, I just looked up in the dictionary just toxic behavior. And it said, a toxic behavior is anything that poisons a relationship and could limit the other person's growth. So, I mean, you can, so many people sabotage themselves, but I think it bleeds over in a relationship where you are actually holding the other person back by refusing to get healthy yourself. I think that's what it means. And then sometimes it even graduates into you're doing damage on purpose and sabotaging someone else because you don't want to see them succeed, you know?
Yeah. And like it's unhealthy as form. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So yeah, well, the first thing that I put down, and this is sort of broad, but I put apologize sooner and have humility and take ownership, all kind of combined together. I think that something that I've always struggled with is like sort of the stubbornness of wanting to be right and not being willing to stop and see my hand in things, which I think goes along with what you're saying. I think for the large part of our marriage, especially in our earlier marriage, like that was such a just this point of contention where we would get stuck in an argument where like I would refuse to concede anything. I would refuse to take ownership for my hand in things. And so as our marriage has sort of grown and we've tried to learn and grow from our mistakes, I've really realized, for one, how much of a part I have in our dynamic. And I think I had this mindset early in our marriage that like if she would just stop doing this, if she would just change this, and thinking that it was almost this one-sided thing, whether it was conscious or subconscious, like just thinking like, ah, like, man, if she just stopped this, then everything would be easier. If she didn't, you know, press me on this, it'd be easier, whatever. And here in the last couple years, really learning and understanding through counseling and just, I mean, as our relationship has progressed, my hand in things and how my dysfunction and my dynamic has really affected our relationship and affected the way that I handle conflict and really my inability to handle conflict well. So that's something I've been trying to work on, is like when there is a conflict, being willing to like slow down and recognize my hand in it and mm-hmm. try to understand your side of things sooner. Which I'm still learning, obviously. Right?
Did you have a healthy habit you wanted to talk about?
Well, so
in conjunction,
taking ownership, I think, is a big thing. So taking ownership of, and that is can be broader, as broad or as focused as I guess you want it to be. But mm-hmm. for me, it was, for one, taking ownership of like my past and realizing, okay, like I didn't learn or have modeled for me like how to have good relationships, and then taking ownership kind of taking ownership of like your past and present and where you're at currently, like how I've handled things and contributed to a, like a dysfunctional dynamic throughout the course of our relationship. So kind of owning that mm-hmm. and then taking ownership in the moment of what's going on for how what I've said or what I'm doing or my actions have maybe hurt you or affected you or affected our relationship. So being willing to take ownership that like you're not like all bad and this terrible person and that I'm just doing everything right and, you know, you're not willing to work with me or something, but realizing my hand in things. So I'd say I put ownership and humility, like having enough humility instead of, because I think the stubbornness and like inability to apologize and not take ownership is really out of pride. And so having humility and being willing to recognize, you know, my faults or my issues that I've had.
So this wasn't first on my list, but it was on my list, and it coincides with what you said. So I put bad apologies as a toxic behavior. I think everyone's been on the other end of just a sucky backhanded apology. And technically they said what they were supposed to say, but you feel really small and minimized. And unfortunately, like, that became a habit with me in our relationship. And I started writing down like apologize without manipulating. Mm-hmm. Do not manipulate him. Apologize and own what you need to own. Tell the truth about what hurt you, and less is more, you know?
Yeah.
Because really that's an attempt to control the narrative still. It's just like, okay, I'm sorry. Basically, like, I don't want you to be able to say that I didn't say I was sorry, but I want you to say this to me, you know? And even if I would know I blew it and I need to apologize, I have a really good reason for it. And, or, I mean, the worst is, and I spent way too much time doing this, like, okay, sorry. Yes, sorry. You know, and even the tone of it sucks. And I think that it started to scare me, because I know adults who are like in their 60s and people who are into 20 or longer year marriages who just are not capable of apologizing when they're wrong in a humble way and leaving it alone. So that's a practice for me, because I would have said that you were pretty stubborn and it took you a long time to apologize. And to me, I apologize quicker in some cases, but not well.
So you're saying a genuine apology.
Yeah. Just like to really, guard my mouth whenever I'd go to apologize and be like, don't control the narrative. Mm-hmm. Don't heap on guilt with your apology. Like, really, truly apologize. And I would say, don't let your feelings be in the driver's seat of that, because I think the most productive times were whenever I really didn't feel broken, but I knew in my heart, like, I did this, I did something really wrong. And I also did know, like, the things you did wrong, but I was just like, I can't control that. I can just say, I am sorry for this. And
what do you mean by most productive times?
I think it would disarm you a little bit.
And, I get what you're saying.
And we would,
like, most effective.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. Like, we started coming, it was like we were babies learning to walk when we came out of this war zone that was our marriage, and it was control and manipulation and rage and anger, into like, okay, this is not how we want to be, you know? Mm-hmm. And the first few really productive, disarming conversations I feel like we had were when we both learned to apologize better, and with an actual genuine heart that wasn't trying to, like, get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And my healthy behavior to replace that is going for walks.
That's good.
Because, I mean, I used to just be like, I'm in this conversation for the long haul. Walks in general are great, but there are times when I just start moving my body and giving both of us a little space and time to process, like, uh-huh, it's okay. And we come back together, and we're not taking ourselves quite so seriously.
It's interesting you say that. So, like, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, and I think that's kind of unique to every person, because I think my natural tendency in conflict, you know, has always been like, I've had to learn to, like, lean into it and actually engage and work through it versus avoiding it or running away from it. So I think for me, it'd be like, oh, we're getting in an argument. It's just going to walk. It's not even,
yeah, you didn't, so think, need any.
But for you, practice. For you, I think it, like, it was kind of the reverse, like the flip side of that. where, you know, you were kind of opposite of me. We're like, we're gonna work through this till the bitter end. Like, how no matter how long it takes, we're gonna wait, like, until we work it out. So I think maybe a healthy point for you is to recognize, like, you know, I need a few minutes just to cool off, or a few minutes to, like, mm-hmm. process things a little more thoroughly. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think our natural giftings that we are, like, made with that aren't wrong, got distorted and used for evil, where I became part of our destructive, toxic dance was, like, you were the lever, I was the chaser. I told myself over and over and over again, like, he does not care. He is always leaving. And so I think it is good that I'm not as afraid of a frank conversation.
It's given us good balance.
Honestly. Yeah. And I think it's good that you're willing to like clear your head. But I think both of those things had to be in a healthy light of day, like submitted to God's authority first before they could be gifts and not toxic, destructive behaviors. So what's your next?
That's a good segue. This wasn't the next one I had, but it's the other one that I, one of the ones I'd put was allowing, like, for psychological error for you is something that I put. So, well, and it's something I've had to just learn to do and realize that, like, when we're having a really tense conversation, or you maybe say things that are hurtful, being willing to say, like, you know what, my wife is a good person and my wife loves me and she cares about me, being able to, like, process that in my mind and realizing that, like, okay, I know that she's upset and things are emotional and tense, but kind of letting that stuff sort of just, instead of letting it stick and letting just, like, sitting there festering in anger, I just realize, like, you know, why is she feeling, like, why is she, so what is kind of the, what's behind this, you know, and allowing some psychological error there and recognizing, like, if I just listen, that maybe we can actually get to, like, why she's really upset or why she's mad and know that, like, she doesn't actually feel this way about me.
So within all of that, what would you pinpoint as the toxic or destructive behavior? Like, in one sentence.
On my behalf?
Yeah.
I think not listening. Like, I think, so I think it's easy to, like, when you're in a tense conversation, especially, you're sitting there thinking about how things are unfair for you. You're thinking about how you're a victim, potentially, or, like, what you're going to say next, how you're going to respond, your argument back, or just interrupting, or whatever. Or wanting to be defensive, you know, and I think being defensive is probably what would go hand in hand with this for me, is that, like, if you're mad at me and you're accusing me of something, my natural reaction is to just automatically get really defensive and defend and build a case to you why I'm actually doing a good job and what you're saying isn't true. And I'm actually pretty good at being defensive and building myself.
You're amazing at it. You're like a lawyer. I, like, start sweating. I'm like, oh my gosh.
But, you know, I think what I've learned is that, like, if I just will listen and allow myself to kind of just sit and listen to what you're saying and tell myself, okay, like, emotions are high right now, things are tense. Lou really does care about me and she's a good person, and allowing for that and just, like, hey, you know, she's having a hard day. We had this tense thing happen, or what have I done that's created this? And taking a step back and, like I said, allowing that, like, psychological error that this is just a moment, like a tense moment in conflict, not who you are completely as a person. And I think I've done that in the past, but it's like globalizing things and, like, you're always like this and you're always like that. And that's not true. It's just, that's what really imprints in your mind, you know, when it's a heated discussion or a tense argument. And for me, I think what helps, kind of the healthy counter thing to that for me is.
So this is your healthy behavior.
Yeah, I think is reading books and learning from other people, and even other people who maybe don't even necessarily have the same like worldview as me, but just kind of take in content and learn from other people and how they interact with others, and being willing to be like kind of more open-minded, I guess, instead of just thinking that my way is the only way, my perspective is the only perspective, because I think that's part of the trap within a relationship, is it's easy to just think that like everyone should see things the way you see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to your spouse. Like, why don't they just understand this? Why don't they understand why I'm hurt by this? Or why don't they understand my perspective on this?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of saying, how can I understand their perspective? Like, what is their side? Put yourself in the other person's shoes. So I think trying to learn and grow and consume like content or books or read, you know, and understand other people's perspectives and learn from others.
Well, I kind of want to move out of conflict management. I think what kills a relationship is a million like small paper cuts of the daily grind. Mm. Sometimes like a fight can almost feel good because it's better than nothing and just carelessness. I know, for you. But I think that's where a lot of loneliness starts to set in, and where we like tell ourselves a lot of lies. And I think for me, I'm not a controlling person, but like I found myself feeling like I could hang on to us better if I could like control you and keep you closer to me, which pushed you away. And I see it across the board. I see it in a lot of relationships. I can only speak for myself, but when life gets crazy and I get left behind, you know, because I have like little kids and my body's not what it used to be, and all these things that I used to kind of have control over
mm-hmm.
aren't in control anymore, then you just start trying to control what you can. And a lot of the time that's the person closest to you that you love,
mm-hmm.
but you end up holding them back from being what they can be. So I don't really know if I'm wrapping words around this right, but like trying to ask myself, why do I feel the need for this control in this situation? And letting go of some of that, and letting, sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world if one of you grows ahead of the other and you kind of take turns growing or developing, even though that can feel scary.
Why is it scary to you?
Because it's just different. I don't think it scares me anymore, but I think in my younger years, seeing you grow just symbolized, I mean, because the truth is I did spend so much time, especially after we had loss and stuff, being, I'm a people person, so I always have a lot of friends around me, but within our marriage, I was very lonely. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah.
Even though you and I can make really good pals, like we've been friends our whole lives basically, and we can make a good team, but there was such a void of intimacy and like deep relationship and trust.
Mm-hmm.
I think so I feel like the close second, like the substitute for that was just to nitpick and nag and control little things. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, definitely.
My positive behavior to replace that with is actually nailing down your fear, walking it to the edge, and realizing like, yeah, we are an us, but I'm a me. And with any relationship that I've had to like face this down with, whether it's family or a friend or a marriage, it's like, I'm a whole person that was made on purpose. Whether you stay or not, or whether this like completely falls apart or not, like Cody is a whole person that's made on purpose, and yeah. I'm a whole person that is good just in and of myself. I'm okay with or without. And that doesn't mean to cheapen our relationship, but I think without doing that and becoming healthy on my own and seeing my worth on my own, I really think that I was asking something of you in our relationship that it just wasn't capable of giving.
What helped you come to that realization?
I think it was the Holy Spirit just being gentle. He's still doing it, but like, and that sounds very Christianese, but for real, just small injections of like, this is your self-worth when you're completely alone and you have nothing to offer anybody else. Mm-hmm. This is your self-worth without your kids. This is your self-worth without your husband. And he might not ever be pouring into you the way that you need. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, this whole thing falls apart. And no one is immune to that. Like, no one is immune to their marriage falling apart 20, 30, even 40 years in. But knowing what I'm worth and who I am, and that I was made really well, with or without, took so much pressure off of our relationship.
So like your self-worth wasn't tied up in how our relationship was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And conversely, without even talking about marriage, I think I've had to do that in friendships, in all kinds of relationships, just being like, I am okay. And I am valuable, because so much, I think if you've experienced abandonment and hurt or rejection or betrayal, which we both have, we brought some baggage into the marriage, but like,
I think people can relate to that.
Sure. Then a lot of the moves you make are more out of whether you're like the peacemaker or whether you're the selfish one or you're aggressive, whatever it is within that relationship, a lot of it is to outrun that fear of loss and rejection. Yeah. And so most of the time, if you can walk that fear down to the edge and be like, even if I am rejected or left, I'm still okay. It takes a lot of that intensity out of relationships and makes them a lot more healthy. That is just my experience. Neither one of us are counselors or psychologists. We've just made a ton of mistakes.
Ton of mistakes, and still trying to figure them out.
Currently making them.
I was just talking to a good friend this morning about how I'm not good at relationships, like literally today. So I think that's not like this journey that I'm definitely in the middle of, but sort of realizing the need for growth and trying to pursue that change. This may correlate a little bit with the last point I made, but this concept comes from a book that was really impactful to me, which is 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. Really good book.
How many times have you read that? 3?
5.
No, you haven't. What? Yes. I feel like
yes,
I have read it also 5 times in conjunction with you.
You still need to actually do it.
No, I've listened to the Audible version in the form of you telling me about it a lot. But go on ahead. Total respect. Thank you.
So it's 7 habits. I mean, they're based kind of on biblical foundational principles. But they're just, and they build upon each other. But the 5th habit is seek first to understand, then to be understood. And he goes obviously really into depth with that. And that one has stuck out to me with any of the other habits, probably because it's the one I recognized, in my opinion, that I needed the most work on. Like I realized listening to the book that I have thought I was a good listener, or maybe not realized how bad of a listener I was. Mm. and listening to this book, realizing like, oh my goodness, like the way he's talking about listening to people, empathically listening to people, is like on a whole different level. And just through his personal experiencing and examples and things that he did, just realizing how much it made sense of like, people are so often trying to make themselves understood and they're listening with intent to respond. And so, and that's even if you're not in a, if you're just in a lighthearted conversation, oftentimes people, myself included, you're listening, but with intent to respond. Like you're thinking about how something applies to you, or like, oh, I have this cool story I'm going to tell. I mean, that's not necessarily like bad or evil, but at the same time, realizing for me, just eye opening, like, man, how much am I doing this to people, where I'm often just thinking about like the next thing I'm going to say.
You're reloading and, while they're talking.
And so for me, this one's a big one. In conflict or out of conflict, in our marriage or out of our marriage, like with friends or coworkers or
whatever. You seen that make a difference? Like active listening, have you seen that make a difference in your workplace?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So for me, it's huge. And it's beyond just like active listening. It's a whole another level that he explains of listening, because there's listening, there's like five different levels of listening that he talks about. And kind of the fifth level, the highest level, is empathic listening, which goes well beyond just like hearing the words and acknowledging the words. It goes to another level of actually putting yourself in their shoes, really trying to understand the other person's paradigm and their perspective and their worldview and like why they feel the way they feel or why they think the way they think, trying to really understand like why they are coming from where they're coming from, what they're thinking, what's going on in their lives, and looking at things through their lens instead of through yours. Because we listen to people through our lens, like we listen to people and filter, which is natural, you know, but that's this sort of higher level of listening that he talks about in the Seven Habits book, empathic listening. So really listening with a genuine desire to understand. But the point that he tries to make is, if you can genuinely do this, and it can't be faked, like it can't be imitated, or you can't pretend that you empathically care or want to listen to someone. But the point he's trying to make is that not that you just need to be like a doormat and never have your voice be heard. The point he really is making is that if you first try to understand others' needs, or, you know, your spouse's needs or whoever, whatever relationship it may be, you'll be more able to influence or motivate or inspire or lead or whatever the case may be. Because you'll, if someone feels like you truly understand them and you truly get them, like genuinely do, and you get what they're saying, then it's going to open them up to want to hear your opinion, want to hear your perspective. And for me, that concept of like listening with intent to reply basically is something that I think I've done a lot throughout our marriage, whether it's a tense conversation or just a lighthearted conversation.
I mean, in previous years of our marriage, I think that added to my loneliness, because you would get home and I would be telling you a story, or I'd be like excited to see you and tell you about my day. And I'd look at you and be like, he is on a different planet. Yeah. He's thinking about what he's going to talk about next. He is thinking about whatever happened at work. And so I would just kind of shut down and go do something else or end up talking to other friends. And, realizing kind of it's not an overt like being mean to someone, but it really diminishes the value that they bring to a relationship.
And I think too, I think not doing this well can take something that's not like a tension point and turn it into a conflict, you know, in a situation, say, where you're just trying to tell me about your day and like a frustration you have, like, oh, it was a hard day because, you know, this or that, like the kids were wild or whatever. I think in the past I've had a tendency to just prescribe, you know, well, you just got to do this. You just need to do this and this, and then you'll be fine. Instead of trying to listen, you know,
to what's actually going on and hear what you're saying, mm-hmm. or just sit with you and talk with you like as a friend, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I think one of my worst fears is in the world is being misunderstood. Like if mm-hmm. I have a good intent and I'm trying to do something that's already yeah. kind of maybe not easy for me and I'm misunderstood, it like it's hurtful. So I think that it does help whenever
makes
you
me sad. Listen. Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. I
maybe that's still, a whole nother podcast. Yeah, I don't know.
I think I'm afraid of being misunderstood and you're afraid of intimacy, emotional intimacy.
Yeah, what type of intimacy are we talking about?
I think you know.
I don't think I'm afraid of it.
Okay.
I think it's not that, and I think that's evolved throughout our marriage, but I think typically it's just been avoidant of conflict, like anything tense or hard, you know, actually trying to work through something yeah. challenging, because I've always wanted to keep things lighthearted, you know,
yeah.
surface level.
And you're someone that you're so good at everything you do. And if you're not good at it, then you don't want to do it anymore. And so I think when we got into marriage and it didn't come naturally for you, it doesn't come naturally to anybody really.
Yeah.
But I think you just were like, well, I'm going to move on to other stuff that I'm really good at and mm-hmm. spend less time on this.
Yeah.
And I understand that
now. But I
also
just didn't know, like I was ignorant and didn't know what to do, but you're right. That is, I think mm-hmm. I turn my energy elsewhere, but
yeah. So like you would call your toxic habit in this not listening in your healthy habit, active, intentional,
empathic listening.
Empathic,
but you know what?
Listening.
What helps me with this, though, that I was going to say is physical activity, because it helps me, definitely helps me clear my mind. And what I've tried to make a habit of more lately is spending time, like, I used to think, like, for exercise or fitness, I had to do like these big grand adventures
mm-hmm.
and, you know, big runs, big hikes, hours long. And I love doing that still, but when I don't have time, still just taking time here and there to walk or do yoga and like really focus and pray and reflect on just kind of what's going on, you know, in a relationship or with work or whatever the case may be. And I think that time of reflection and just thinking and being physical helps clear my head and helps me to kind of refocus. So yeah, that kind of wraps up my three. You have one more.
I have one more. My toxic habit is playing the victim. Yeah.
Tell me more.
It's gross. I will. So it's funny because when I've gone into getting in the habit of being attached to my grief, which I have had hard things happen in my life and I don't know why. They seem senseless. But being attached to my grief, taking on that as my identity. And using it as an excuse to get stuck and being like, well, of course they're not struggling with this because their life circumstances are better, or they've never lost a baby, or they, you know, like I feel like you can get in a knee-jerk habit of playing the victim, being a victim, being attached to your grief. And it destroys relationships, friendships and relationships. And I'm not sure why. I need to think about more what it is that sucks the life out of it. But my healthy habits, conversely, are owning what hurts you and not rushing out of it. And somehow that is different than victim mindset. Like when I have said out loud super clearly with you, like this hurt me. You're hurting me. This hurts me. I don't want you to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why. And it's super clear. It's not convoluted. It is so much more productive than self-pity
mm-hmm.
and being frozen. And
in life, just like, well, we can never get ahead with money and pay off debt because we've had all these bad things happen to us. And I can never get in good shape because of this. And then you just don't even make one move because mm-hmm. everything's bad.
Yeah.
And so I guess my healthy habits to replace it with are saying out loud the things that are actually hurting you. And usually it's underneath a big pile of complaints and it's the actual thing that this really hurts me and I cannot get past it, and not rushing out of that. Like I've been sitting with a few things like that really hurts and I can't make it better. I don't know how to make it better, but it somehow frees up the rest of my brain to be more productive. The other positive or healthy habit is, I have two more healthy habits. One is gratitude and thankfulness. And that's sort of like a catchword right now. So it kind of bothers me that it's become cheapened a little bit. Like, oh, gratitude journals. But like it really does go to war against this place, the places you can get stuck. Yeah. And it's another thing that your feelings have to follow your behavior. Like your behavior has to just start naming things that are undisputably good in your life and that are gifts that you maybe don't deserve. And then your heart starts to change after.
You guys, I wanted to remind you that there's still a few spots left for the Creative Sailor Retreat happening June 11th through the 14th. Come create, rest, and feast with us. If you're interested and want more details, you can DM me or you can email creativesailorretreats@gmail.com.
It's just like seeing other people and making them know that they're seen. And if I think something nice about them, like saying it out loud to them right away and not sitting on it and making people feel valuable, somehow it just like releases a lot of the poison in my own life and heart away.
Mm-hmm.
And it dispels a lot of the critical. When I get into like being in a critical spirit with you and with everyone around me, I think that's
yourself.
Well, I was going to say that's the reflection of the voice I'm using on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a reflection of, I think, how I think God is talking to me. And so that's a really good roadmap to follow backwards too. So I think pouring life into other people, all these things are super basic and you could probably put them all on a t-shirt, but they really are things that have like one tiny step at a time, one bite at a time, one degree at a time, like breathe life into the dead bones of our relationship and several of our relationships in our life. And we're mid process, but I think it's really important, at least if nobody else gets anything from this, it's important for us to sort of autopsy so that we're not old, brittle, bitter people who don't have grace for anyone else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, you're talking about kind of pouring into other people. Do you think that kind of just has to do with taking the focus off of yourself?
Yeah.
And
yeah, that was a long way around kind of the antidote for the victim mindset.
Yeah.
But I notice in the lives of other people that I love that are really, really stuck, they don't see other people and they're not doing anything for anyone else. Yeah. And I think there is so much joy to be had there that you can really miss out on if you just won't look out the, you know, the four walls of your own house and your own life. And then on a micro level, just looking for ways to like bless you and bless the kids as people, not because it's my duty and because I have to, because you're my family, but just like these people are valuable souls that are in my life. And how can I like put some life into them in a way that matters? And I don't know, it's kind of revived me too.
we go through, people go through really hard things that are really valid, you know? So it's like to kind of be for a moment in this place of like, man, I'm really struggling. Isn't a bad thing. I think it's, you know, how you respond and how you react to that, especially over time. And I think early in our marriage, you know, when we went through some hard things, it just was like, man, this horrible thing happened to us. And just being sort of stuck and paralyzed for years. Yeah. And, you know, as I'm older, realizing and learning that being proactive and taking the focus off of the things that you can't control and really focusing on what you can control. Yeah. And even if you have to do that on a really micro level, like what can I do right now? Like what can I do in this moment, right in this day?
Right. And well, and just so everyone is clear, like I'm not doing great right now. I'm not doing good, but it's like,
we appreciate your honesty.
You're welcome. I think everyone knows that has ever looked at me right now, but the thing is I'm so thankful that God has done some work in the last few years in me to where I just have this very gentle voice within me that knows that I'm not going to be stuck here forever. And that is not like I am being very gentle with myself because I know that reflects the heart of God towards me. And it's not, any action that I take towards health is like one tiny step at a time, one like breath at a time, getting through today. When I zoom out and I look at the big picture of like everything that's happened and everything that needs to happen, I'm shut down, I'm angry, I'm paralyzed. But if I can gently listen to the voice of God and make just the next right thing and the next right step and take a walk, not be like, okay, what's the plan? I've got to lose all this, you know, 50 pounds of baby weight and I got to do this or that, but just like take a walk and nourish my body and have a drink of water and say something kind and take in some kindness. Right. It's like making a big, big difference.
Yeah. What's encouraged me is to look back and see, you know, look back 5 years ago and kind of where we were at in our life and in our marriage and see that there's been growth, you know, because in the day-to-day grind or when things are hard, you don't always see that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's encouraged me. And sort of realize like, okay, this isn't a linear thing. Like, it's not like you get married and you just go onward and upward from there.
Mm.
And not that I guess people really think that. I hope they don't think that. But like we have kind of grown and evolved and been molded and things just continue to progress, I think, and go forward. And I think for me, it's encouraging. Like we just need to always be pursuing like how we can improve our marriage, how we can be better parents, how we can be better people like in our community, friends, to our friends.
Yeah.
And if we can look back and reflect on that and say like, yeah, you know what, we have grown, we have changed, we're not the same people that we were. I think that's really the goal.
Yep.
Yep.
And there's so much power in confession, which we don't do enough of, and which goes back to good apologies. And there's so much community in storytelling and confession. And I just want to adapt those rhythms into our lives so that we can invite other people in our neighborhood and in our circles into that. Is that it?
That's it. Did we do it?
We did it. I love you.
Love you too.